Hello again. We're coming to you from the trenches. I'm Bree Hayden, and this is a special all-NATO episode of From the Trenches.
NATO receives millions of our tax dollars, money that is desperately needed to fund our rapidly deteriorating social programs.
Coming up, we'll hear from the opening press conference organized by NATO protest participants who explain in detail their reasons to protest NATO.
You don't build the mightiest military alliance in human history except to either be able to wage war, or threaten to wage war. Those are the three reasons you do it.
And we'll hear excerpts from a debate on NATO featuring NATO scholar and activist Rick Rozoff and Staff Sergeant Iris Feliciano. But first, here are some headlines from actions on the streets of Chicago during the NATO summit with Mitchell Stepinchik.
The city of Chicago reversed its revocation of a protest permit for the nurses' union National Nurses United in a stunning display of the power of popular outrage. The group received permission from the city of Chicago months ago to stage a mass rally for economic justice on the eve of the NATO summit in Chicago, only to have that permit suddenly canceled on the week of May 10th. After threats of a lawsuit and vocal protests by Chicago and national nurses and public supporters, along with biting criticism by musician and supporter Tom Morello, the city blinked and reversed the move to try to kettle the nurses in Grant Park, far from the planned Daily Plaza rally site. The nurses publicly praised Tom Morello and public support for helping to pressure the city to reverse course. The rally took place on May 18th as scheduled. Father José Landaverde and Occupy El Barrio led a march against immigration detention from Chicago's Little Village neighborhood to downtown Chicago, ending outside the ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Chicago Immigration Court. Organizer Crystal Vance Guerra reported to Chicago in the media that the action is, quote, addressing issues that impact us here in Chicago, but also is making connections to NATO. Vance Guerra asked, why is the city of Chicago willing to put in money to fund a summit of people who are propagating wars across the globe? How is it that we have money for war and immigration detention, but not education? There's all this money for war, but not for the people, unquote. Marchers rallied outside of the Our Lady of Guadalupe Anglican Mission in Little Village, then marched to the Lincoln Methodist Church in Pilsen. They met up with Occupy Chicago members and marched downtown to the Chicago Immigration Court at Van Buren and Clinton to hold a press conference and rally against ICE policies. Activists then picketed the space, and several activists blocked the doors for over an hour, restricting access to the building. Two of the activists blocking the doors, José Landaverde and Emma Lozano, were arrested after police demanded protesters vacate the space, quote, at request of building management, unquote. While the building management's requests were quickly heeded, the protesters' requests for an end to deportations were disregarded by the police. The Chicago Police Department prepped Chicago's corporate media for the NATO summit with an eye to suppressing independent media coverage, according to a leaked memo. A PDF file beginning with the foreboding words, quote, not intended for general distribution, for media guidance only, unquote, included some important so-called ground rules, such as the following. Media access generally will be the same as public access. Credentials will, however, allow media personnel access to media-only areas. No cutting in and out of police lines will be permitted or going up against their backs. Those who follow protesters onto private property to document their actions are also will be subject to arrest if laws are broken. Any member of the media who is arrested will have to go through the same booking process as anyone else. Release of equipment depends on what part of equipment played in the events that led to the arrest. The Chicago Police Department does not intend to break ground in terms of enforcing the Illinois eavesdropping law. In short, police will not interfere if we videotape or record audio of police activities, including arrests. Reporters who carry backpacks should be prepared to show their content to police. You may be asked to fire up and demonstrate any equipment that does not look familiar to officers. It is the intent of Chicago police to provide close access, with direct vision and contact, with those entering and leaving events, marchers, rallies. But police emphasize that those who choose to walk amid the protesters are, quote, on your own, unquote. The National Lawyers Guild, condemned a preemptive police raid that took place at approximately 11:30 p.m. on Wednesday, May 16th in the Bridgeport neighborhood, and instances of harassment on the street in which Chicago police unlawfully detained, searched, and questioned NATO protesters. The Bridgeport raid was apparently conducted by the Organized Crime Division of the Chicago Police Department and resulted in as many as 8 arrests. According to witnesses in Bridgeport, police broke down a door to access a 6-unit apartment building near 32nd and Morgan Streets without a search warrant. Police entered an apartment with guns drawn and tackled one of the tenants to the floor in his kitchen. 2 tenants were handcuffed for more than 2 hours in their living room, while police searched their apartment and a neighboring unit, repeatedly calling one of the tenants a slur. A search warrant produced 4 hours after police broke into the apartment was missing a judge's signature, according to witnesses. Among items seized by police in the Bridgeport raid were beer-making supplies and at least one cell phone. Sarah Gelsomino with the National Lawyers Guild and the People's Law Office responded, quote, "Preemptive raids like this are a hallmark of national special security events. The Chicago police and other law enforcement agencies should be aware that this behavior will not be tolerated and will result in real consequences for the city," unquote. In another incident, 3 plainclothes police officers unlawfully stopped, handcuffed, and searched a NATO protester on Michigan Avenue and Wacker Drive at approximately 2 p.m. on May 17th. According to the protester, he did not consent to a search, and there was no probable cause to detain him. The police also photographed and questioned him about where he was from, how he got to Chicago, how long it took, what he was doing here, where he was staying, who he was with, and how long he was planning to stay in Chicago. The protester refused to answer any questions and was eventually released. Representatives of CanGate, Occupy Chicago, and Chicago Action Medical have condemned systemic police violence at the CanGate Iraq Veterans Against the War anti-NATO protest on Sunday, May 20th. And more broadly, condemned the military machine that has brought thousands of protesters together in Chicago for a week of actions and events to oppose the NATO meeting and its larger agenda. CanGate organizer Joe Osbacher responded, quote, "The police have been preparing for this mentally, physically, emotionally, preparing to beat us up for a year. This is the violence that NATO is, that NATO brings with them," unquote. Sunday's police violence came on the heels of a peaceful anti-NATO march designed to draw attention to NATO's role as the military arm of global elites, and to the enormous destruction that NATO military action brings to the people whose countries it bombs and occupies. At the terminus of Sunday's march, which authorities refused to allow within sight and sound of the NATO summit, 45 military veterans of Afghanistan and Iraq condemned U.S. military policy and threw their medals in the direction of the NATO gathering in a refutation of NATO's actions in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and beyond. On Sunday, after IVAW members tossed their medals in the direction of the NATO summit, police moved swiftly to push people away from their rally site at Michigan and Wabash, with many protesters kettled north of Cermak and west of the east side of Wabash, and hundreds unclear on how to, or unable to, exit. Many of those kettled protesters watched in horror as the police unleashed a wave of clubbing on protesters near the front of the line, leaving the area between the two kettled groups of protesters littered with empty plastic water bottles and the shoes and hats of more than 40 protesters who were dragged out of the crowd, beaten, and arrested. National Lawyers Guild attorneys reported on Monday that the majority of those arrested at the scene have been released, refuting the police assertion that only violent protesters were taken into custody. Sunday's police violence after the veterans' actions came on the heels of a series of police assaults on boisterous but nonviolent Occupy protesters on Saturday as they wound their way through the city in a series of converging actions. The police attacks on local Occupy organizers in recent days represent the first time the police have overtly targeted the local movement with brutality. Protesters also reported the number of undercover officers in the Sunday march who were apparently inciting some protesters to violence. Protesters say that this pattern of police infiltration and incitement continued into Sunday night. Police also arrested 5 activists in the run-up to Sunday's march on terrorism charges, with truthout.org reporting that all 5 are linked by the word of 2 police informants, nicknamed Mo and Gloves, in what is increasingly being viewed as cases of entrapment in which the informants' allegations provide the only so-called evidence of wrongdoing. Volunteer medic Kelly Hayes responded, quote, "There was no excuse for Sunday's police violence. I saw friends injured again and again. We do all we can to look out for each other, but the city is supposed to look out for us," unquote.
Those are some recent headlines from actions on the streets of Chicago during the NATO summit. For more news and headlines from Chicago and around the world on NATO and a variety of other topics, go online to the Chicago Indie Media website at chicago.indiemedia.org. We're coming to you from the trenches.
Standing strong out here in our streets now. Standing strong and claiming our time. Standing strong out here in our streets now. Because the dawn has spread with their crime. Won't back down till we get it. But we reckon we ought to get it. Been marching and fighting. We still got so terribly far to go. Only crime that's being committed. Crime of making us hungry and poor. Kicking us out of our homes every minute. When they ought to be helping us more. Hold it steady right there while we hit it. Well, we reckon we ought to get it. Been marching and fighting. But we still got so terribly far to go. See the cops hiding in riot gear. Like a chain gang they don't even know. Being used like puppets for greed. Hear a scream, you're one of us, don't you know? Hold it right there while we hit it. Well, we reckon we ought to get it. Been marching and fighting. But we still got so terribly far to go.
Chicago's corporate media has certainly covered the protests surrounding the 2012 NATO summit in Chicago. But much of that coverage has been characterized as more heat than light. That is, there's attention to protests, but without providing nuanced attention to the context of the grievances behind those protests. To provide some detail to that context, we present here the full audio of a press conference held on May 10, 2012, and entitled The Occupy Chicago Preview of the NATO Week of Actions. The audio was recorded by Chicago's CAN-TV Public Access Cable Network.
I'm Rachel Perotta, that's RachelPerrotta, and I'm a member of the Occupy Chicago Press Committee. We put together this press conference to give you a preview of the NATO Weeks of Actions and events. While we do have many events that are public, there will be events that pop up that have not been disclosed yet or that have not been planned yet. And in order to make sure that you stay updated about that, we've created a virtual online press kit. All of you should have been able to pick this up on your way in. This press kit will be updated every morning with the phone numbers of people who will be in the streets that you can call for updates or interviews. It will be updated with the live streamers who are streaming right at that moment so you can get the best stories. And it will be updated with breaking news, actions, and events. We're going to have a few speakers today. I'll announce each one before they speak. When they're done, we'll take a couple of questions, and then after that, people will be available to speak with you one-on-one, including the folks from Occupy Walk, who came all the way here from all across the country. Their press release is in the back of their kit, but they are not a speaker today. From Occupy Chicago, we have Zoe Sigman, that is Zoe Sigman.
Good morning. Welcome to the Chicago Spring. Mayor 1% Emanuel has issued an invitation to NATO's warmongers to invade Chicago, bringing the military arm of the 1% right here to our city. For some Chicagoans, the presence of military policing will be a taste of the daily reality of communities in Afghanistan and Libya. For other Chicagoans, the warnings of violence downtown echo the reality of police repression they face in their everyday life. NATO is a symptom of the global system of violence and oppression at the hands of the 1%. NATO claims to bring peace, but in fact brings only the violence of soldiers and bombs. It has no regard for the human or environmental consequences of its actions, actions designed to further the 1%'s continual dominance of the world. NATO receives millions of our tax dollars, money that is desperately needed to fund our rapidly deteriorating social programs. Occupy Chicago has planned and will participate in 10 days of actions designed to highlight the interests of that NATO serves. We will combat the effects of the measures of austerity imposed by institutions like the G8 and NATO. Why has Rahm Emanuel and World Business Chicago brought NATO to our city? A city whose communities are crumbling, whose schools are underfunded,
whose clinics are being closed, whose jobs are disappearing, and whose homes are being stolen by the banks. On May 21st, Occupy Chicago will shut down the Boeing Corporation. Boeing is a corporate war criminal who profits off of violence on a mass scale. They receive huge tax cuts from the city of Chicago while making money on death and war. Boeing builds border walls and warplanes. They are responsible for vast environmental deterioration through enormous consumption of fossil fuels. The people of the world will confront Boeing, holding the company accountable for the crimes it has committed. From May 12th to 21st, join us in opposing the NATO war machine. Thank you.
Next, from the People's Summit, we have Jesse McAdoo. That's JESSEMCADOO.
On May 12th and 13th, Kangate, the campaign against the NATO G8 war and poverty agenda in Occupy Chicago, will host the People's Summit, an opportunity to engage in education, democracy, and debate that are deeply missing from our political system in NATO. Where NATO will be meeting behind closed doors surrounded by the riot police on May 20th and 21st, the People's Summit will be open to everyone with complete transparency and free of charge. While NATO will discuss current and future wars aimed at progressing the agendas of the 1% war machines, the People's Summit will discuss a future for the 99%, a future that values healthcare and education for all instead of war and corporate warfare for the 1%. The People's Summit will show Chicago what a real democracy looks like. The summit will host a variety of over 40 workshops on topics from poverty, racism, and war to healthcare, workers' rights, gender liberation, and women's liberation. The summit will bring together members from the interfaith community, environmentalists, labor unions, healthcare activists, immigrant rights workers, anti-racist activists, for opportunity to educate, have dialogue, and build solidarity for struggles facing us today and in the future, and how these struggles are connected not only locally, but nationally and internationally. Keynote speakers for the People's Summit will include Sarai Sarar, a member of Afghans for Peace from Toronto, Raina Baran, a member of the International Coordinating Committee of the European No to NATO Network. Other speakers include Kathy Kelly from Voices for Creative Nonviolence, Death Row Prisoner Mamia Abu Jamal via speakerphone, Malik Majihad, Muslim of the Muslim Peace Coalition, Medea Benjamin of Code Pink, and Kona Ann Wright. For more information about the People's Summit and to pre-register for this event, please visit us at www.peoplessummitchicago.org. Thank you.
And next, from National Nurses United, we will have Jan Rodolfo, RN. She is National Nurses United Midwest Director.
National Nurses United is an organization of 170,000 registered nurses across the country in coalition with a number of nurses unions in other countries. When we found out that the G8 would be coming to Chicago, we made a decision to move an event to Chicago, where the world would be watching, and invited nurses from around the world to come together to stand up against the austerity measures of the G8. What is austerity? Austerity is nothing less than food being stolen from the mouths of children, students drowning in student loan debt, individuals losing their houses, patients unable to fill their pain medication prescriptions or their chemotherapy, patients that delay getting treatment because they don't have health insurance. Those are not G8 pragmatic measures or policies to be discussed in the abstract, but things that impact our patients, our families, ourselves, and our communities. Nurses are positioned uniquely in every community around the world, and so nurses are coming together to speak out against the G8 and to propose an alternative, which is a Robin Hood tax, a simple tax on Wall Street, 0.5% tax, a sales tax essentially, that's only 50 cents on every $100 of trades, unlike food and things, items that we buy at the store that we need, where we pay a substantial sales tax. Currently, Wall Street and traders pay no sales tax at all, so 0.5% Robin Hood tax. That is our message, and as a result of the resounding resonance of our message, we believe that the city and Mayor Emanuel have taken the position that they want to push us aside to Petrillo Banchel rather than having us march into the heart of downtown Chicago to Daley Plaza, which is clearly a symbolic center of protest for Chicago. We will not be silenced. We did not cancel our event when the G8 decided to hide at Camp David. We are not going to cancel our event now that the city is moving on our permit. We are on a deadline of end of business today to make a decision, essentially an ultimatum, where they have told us we have to either agree to move to Petrillo Banchel or to have our permit rescinded altogether. We are prepared to file in federal court for injunctive relief. Again, we are on deadline for the end of today. And regardless of what happens in terms of the location of the event will go on, and registered nurses will not have their voices silenced. Thank you. Yeah.
Our next speaker is with the Coalition Against the NATO G8 War and Poverty Agenda, or CANGATE. His name is Andy Thayer. That's A-N-D-Y-T-H-A-Y-E-R.
Thank you, Rachel. And I and CANGATE are very proud to stand with the nurses in their fight with the city to exercise their free speech rights. Now, back when Occupy Chicago and the other Occupy started in last fall, people criticized them as perhaps having too narrow a focus. But Occupy rapidly learned to focus not just on the economic, but on the political and on the military. They got it. They were not fooled when President Obama pulled the G8 summit from Chicago. They knew that NATO represented the de facto military arm of the G8, and they are standing proud. We are standing proud with them. I consider myself an Occupy Chicago participant, and we're very gratified to announce this morning that Stand Up Chicago is going to be standing with us in the streets of Chicago on Sunday, May 20th for the big march against the NATO headquarters just a few blocks away from here. So we encourage everyone to join us in the streets. Do not let the city of Chicago to intimidate you from exercising your First Amendment rights. We're going to be very proud to have the people who have sacrificed more than any other Americans leading our march. Iraq Veterans Against the War will be proudly leading our march down to McCormick Place to turn in their medals, and we're very proud to stand with them. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Right. And our next speaker will be with the Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW. His name is Aaron Hughes. That's A-A-R-O-N. H-U-G-H-E-S.
Every day, 18 veterans commit suicide. 17% of the service members in Afghanistan are on psychotropic medication. 20 to 50% of the service members in the service right now are already diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, or military sexual trauma. One-third of the women serving in the military are sexually assaulted by their peers. 48% of the individuals that report sexual assault are males. The military is in a mental health crisis right now. And these generals that are tasked with the care of the service members are not living up to that task. And if they cannot live up to their creed and to their task of their service members, the soldiers that sacrifice daily for them, how are they to accomplish their mission of supposedly building democracy for others in Afghanistan? That's why Iraq Veterans Against the War demands an immediate withdrawal and the return of all our brothers and sisters from Afghanistan so the Afghans can begin healing and so we can begin healing. We're marching and we're going to be returning our medals, not to protest necessarily, but to start healing. To demand justice, to simply ask that the military acknowledges, that these generals acknowledge that a wrong has occurred. We live with that wrong every single day. When I first crossed the border into Iraq, I saw the little kids on the side of the road, and I thought, "Huh, these are the kids I'm here to liberate. These are the kids I'm here to help." Well, those kids were still on the side of the road 6 months later. And they were still on the side of the road 12 months later, and 13 months later, and 14 months later, and 15 months later. And on my last convoy out of Iraq, My squad leader, Sergeant Holland, cried for 3 hours asking himself over and over again, what have we been doing? What have we been doing? What have we been doing? This is something that's on repeat in my mind every single day. And I think it's time that these generals ask themselves that question. And we're asking them to come down and accept these tokens of the global war on terror that we don't want to be a part of anymore. Because we don't want to be a part of a mistake any longer. Thank you.
All right. Well put.
Okay, our next speaker is with the mental health movement. They've been doing the occupation at the Woodlawn Clinic. Her name is Nadana Carter. That's a big N apostrophe big D A-N-A, last name C-A-R-T-E-R.
It's on point that I follow the last gentleman because in Chicago, mental health is being denied to the poor. That means all of the veterans that are coming home that are not able to be treated at the veterans' hospitals will have no place to go. The suicide rates will rise. Already we have 18 people that have been hospitalized. It's going to cost the city and the state and the county over $250,000 for that short stint that those people are going to be forced into the hospitals. We have occupied for 25 days at the Woodlawn Clinic. We have a new occupation that we are asking all occupiers from all over the world when they come to Chicago, come to our occupation at 2343 North Milwaukee in Logan Square Northwest Clinic. We're not committing any crimes. We're just making sure that everyone that needs mental health gets it. We've never had our voice. As the veteran said, people will die. We've had 3 suicides since this last budget was passed. Thank you.
Thank you. You're right.
Next, we have a representative from Network for NATO Free Future. His name is Michael McConnell of the American Friends Service Committee. He's their regional director. That's spelled M-I-C-H-A-E-L, last name M, little c, big C, O-N-N-E-L-L.
The American Friends Service Committee and Peace Action, two of the largest peace organizations in the United States, are sponsoring a counter summit on May 18th and 19th. We will be bringing in people who actually live in the North Atlantic and are against NATO, people from Europe, former parliamentarians, and also people from Afghanistan to speak against the war in Afghanistan and the NATO policies. Also, Tom Hayden is coming to try to stop another war back to Chicago. I wore a suit today because I hear that the downtown Chicago workers are being told not to wear suits and camouflage themselves as protesters. Well, I'm a protester. And I want to say that I represent, and all of us here represent, the majority of Americans. Over 60% are against the war in Afghanistan and against NATO policies. So the NATO alliance, born of the Cold War and once supposedly defensive, has now turned offensive, aggressive, and interventionist. And that is bad for Chicago, and it's bad for business, and it's bad for our local communities. So downtown office workers, don't be afraid of the protesters. Be afraid, very afraid, of the NATO alliance coming here. Because billions more dollars, if their policies are passed, to be more interventionist, they have partnerships from Turkmenistan to Mauritania and beyond to continue war permanently. Billions of dollars will be drained from us as taxpayers and from our local communities. So my advice to the local Chicago office workers are, don't ditch the suit, ditch your job, and join us. Come be a protester. Don't just dress like one, actually be one.
Next, we have a speaker from an event that hasn't really been announced fully yet. It's called the Barefoot Summit, and his name is David Myers. That's D-A-V-I-D-M-E-Y-E-R-S.
A little unaccustomed to public speaking. I'm here to bring part of a crew that's bringing the Barefoot Summit to Chicago, to Petrillo Bandshell. Any questions?
we're gonna take questions at the end, but if you could just explain.
We have 3 minutes for questions. It is basically a love letter from the people of Chicago to the world. It's a showcase for all the best that Chicago has to offer in terms of music, culture, youth culture, and a lot of other things that are coming together really, really well.
What day is it?
We are looking at May 18th, 19th, and 20th.
Where?
At Petrillo Banjo. Questions?
So these will be performances and other?
There'll be performances, a lot of performances, a lot of speakers. We are looking at, I gotta slow down a second. We have a lot of the greatest sort of local talent. Rebel Diaz, a bunch of bands from Pilsen and Little Village. We're trying to cover the whole city and get everybody equal access to the stage. And in order to do that in a city of 8 million, we are also building pipelines for people to be able to speak at the mic who aren't connected. So we have people's mic checks, which is an open mic where people can sign up. We have to work out that process to make it democratic and representative. And we are having luminary mic checks or open mics where people who have sort of more star status standing in the world can come and have their say.
Where can people get more information?
At this point, you'd have to call me because we don't have anything up. It'll be at barefootsummit.net.
Do you have permission from the city yet? Is that what you straightened out?
We don't have a band shell. They have the band shell. So that's in process. I have no doubt that that's happening. None.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Our next speaker is with Chicago Indie Media. They're one of the main sources of independent news that's going to be coming out of the summit. His name is Chicago Indie Media, is spelled Chicago and then I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A. His name is Jimmy Johnson, that's J-I-M-M-Y-J-O-H-N-S-O-N, and he is the last speaker. We'll take some questions after that.
Hey, good morning, y'all. Make me look skinny, okay? We're here with Chicago Indie Media and NATO Indie Media. Over the past, let's say, 15, 20 years, especially, we've seen drastic cutbacks at the corporate media. Reporters and media technicians are being put out of work. There's corporate cutbacks. And so, one, we stand in solidarity with our workers and our colleagues in the corporate press. But also, these cutbacks have led to a wire press-driven reliance on news, and then the further editorial and advertiser-driven lines that we see inside the corporate press. And at Indie Media, we're not acting as a supplement for these cutbacks, but what we are doing instead at Chicago Indie Media and NATO Indie Media is that we will be, providing a grassroots-driven coverage, where protesters themselves can get their voice out instead. And along with voices that aren't always heard, the officials from NATO, the city officials, and the police will get plenty of time in front of the cameras and in the news. What we won't hear quite as much of is what's coming from the grassroots, what the protesters themselves saying. And so that's what we're helping to provide. And to do so, we have a convergence center at 1000 North Milwaukee that will be set up at the Multiculti Place on the fourth floor, that will be set up in order for media and grassroots journalists to come meet each other, as well as to dump tape and do whatever other kind of media information that they need to do. We'll be aggregating Twitter feeds and live streams and helping to coordinate a best possible outreach and forming a grassroots media narrative against the NATO protests. Thank you.
That was a press conference held on May 10th, 2012, entitled The Occupy Chicago Preview of the NATO Week of Actions. There is one update since the press conference was held. The City of Chicago restored the permit that was awarded to National Nurses United, so the rally and march from Daley Plaza proceeded as planned. And a brief correction. One of the main websites of NATO protest activities mentioned in the press conference is not protestnato.org, but instead natoprotest.org. To learn more about NATO protests, visit natoprotest.org. We're coming to you from the trenches.
As I was walking back to the North Highway, I saw the pain that in this skyway, I saw the loving, they looked in that day. This land was made for you and me.
One of the rare interactions between NATO officials and NATO protesters during the 2012 NATO summit was a debate held at the Pritzker Military Library in downtown Chicago. The debate was sponsored by the National Strategy Forum, a Chicago-based nonprofit institution which examines issues and trends affecting U.S. national strategy and security. The debate was entitled Social Responsibility and National Security Towards a New NATO, was held on May 17, 2012, before a live audience. We'll now hear excerpts from that debate, and we'll hear from two participants, Rick Rozoff, longtime expert on NATO and organizer of the Stop NATO Project, and Iris Feliciano, a former Marine Corps Staff Sergeant and member of Iraq Veterans Against the War.
I deployed in January of 2002 in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. I did communications. I was a communications specialist, specifically in support of troops going in and out of Afghanistan early on in that war. And so I'm here representing the Iraq Veterans Against the War. In spite of the name and the specificity of the name, there are many members of VAW, for short, that have served in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And so I never served in Iraq, so I want to make that clear too. But we're here to talk about our grievances. We are protesting on Sunday, and we're going to do a march of reconciliation and justice, where we're asking for NATO officials to come and meet us, to acknowledge us as citizens, as members of their lead country in that alliance, and to respectfully receive our medals back. We are returning our Global War on Terrorism service medals and expeditionary medals. We have decided as an organization that we no longer want to keep these tokens of symbols of failed politics in this ongoing war that's led by U.S. and NATO.
I'm not in favor of a new NATO, a reformed NATO, a kinder, gentler NATO. I'm in favor, absolutely, of the abolition of NATO, which is the world's only military bloc and, in my estimate, the greatest threat to world peace. I'm going to take a quote from Sophocles, from Oedipus at Colonus, and I'm going to apply it to NATO. Not to be born at all is the best. The next best, when born, with least delay to trace the backward way to oblivion and non-existence. NATO was the first Cold War military bloc created 63 years ago last month. It is the only remaining Cold War military bloc. All the others were either modeled after NATO or came into existence as a counter force to NATO, including the Warsaw Pact, which dissolved itself 21 years ago. A gentleman that Dick spoke with earlier today, Kurt Volker, was quoted several years ago, incidentally, as former U.S. ambassador to NATO, incidentally boasting that in 2005, NATO was running eight operations in four continents simultaneously. This is a North Atlantic Treaty Organization. He also stated that in 1991, when the Soviet Union, the alleged reason for NATO being created, fragmented into its 15 constituent federal republics and the Warsaw Pact was dissolved, NATO had 16 members and no partners. Currently, NATO has 28 members. That's a 75% increase. By its own count, over 40 partners in every inhabited continent on the world except for South America for the moment. NATO is the largest military bloc in human history with 28 members. In terms of its range, having conducted wars, and I'll defend the choice of the word wars, in three continents in 13 years, in Yugoslavia, in Afghanistan, increasingly over the border in Pakistan, in North Africa last year, where they flew almost 10,000 air sorties, combat missions, over a country of 6 million people, Libya. NATO does not need to be reformed. It should have been dissolved when the Warsaw Pact was dissolved 21 years ago, and it needs to be dissolved now.
You have a program that's going to help your peers, but you're existing on a thin thread because of the economy. Talk about those things.
I think we're all existing on a thin thread, really, whether we're talking about the U.S. nationally or just here locally in Chicago, seeing doors shut to mental health services, seeing jobs cut. I work, my day job is at a nonprofit agency where we provide employment training and employment support for veterans and mental health support for veterans. And it's the hardest thing to have to find a job for a veteran and have to explain to the veteran that it doesn't matter what you did in the military. It doesn't do anything for your resume. They come here, there just are no jobs. No one cares that they just spent 10 years in the service or, you know, 5 years or three deployments to Iraq or Afghanistan. They come here, there are no jobs. It's just that simple. But we're spending so much money on continuing these wars. The last estimate I got was it would be $4 billion annually to continue beyond 2014 training and maintaining the Afghan forces. What can we do in this country, in this, you know, in this economy with $4 billion a year?
Rick, let me ask you to address either all three or one or two that you want to focus on, Afghanistan, alliances, economy, as it relates to NATO.
Sure. I choose Afghanistan because I think the link between NATO and domestic economic policies is rather strained, though in Europe it's a lot more prevalent. My colleague here was mentioning what is known as smart defense. I believe you were too. You know, what NATO calls pulling resources in times of austerity and so forth. However, I think Afghanistan is very noteworthy. Again, in the public relations material that is gushing out of every sewer in Chicago in favor of NATO over the past year, I mean, it's unbelievable saturation. Chicago Council on Global Affairs has brought in Madeleine Albright and R. Nicholas Burns, and Madeleine Albright spoke to a high school in the south side of Chicago a few weeks ago. There are NATO officials, pro-NATO spokesmen talking at high schools in the suburbs. I mean, this has been an inundation of pro-NATO propaganda, but what they fail to tell you is simple facts. It is now over 10.5 years since the invasion of Afghanistan on October 7th, 2001. This is the longest war in the history of Afghanistan. It is arguably the longest war as defined by continuous independent combat operations in the history of the United States. As of last year, the NATO-led International Security Assistance Force had 152,000 troops from 50 nations. This is far larger than the Soviet peak strength, you know, during the earlier Afghan war. And the fact that NATO has pulled together an international network of 50 nations willing to send their sons and daughters to kill and die in a useless war is an indication, again, of how dangerous a phenomenon NATO has become in the post-Cold War era. There have been statements by leading NATO military officials like Admiral James Stavridis, who's a major NATO military commander in Europe, of late, you know, praising the role of American allies in Kosovo, Yugoslavia, in Afghanistan, and in Libya. That is, wars, again, in three continents, and basically suggesting that the wars aren't meant to be won. They're used as testing grounds for the United States and NATO to build up a global expeditionary military force for the next war. And if I may, real quickly, sure. The Washington Post last month had an editorial calling for NATO intervention in Mali, in northwestern Africa. Several times over the past week, the Prime Minister of Turkey has talked about invoking NATO's Article 5 Mutual Military Assistance Clause, which would mean war against Syria. This is a mechanism that evidently any major member of the alliance at any point can go to Brussels, invoke Article 5, and declare war on people in most every part of the world. It is nothing less than that.
Thank you. Let us turn to another issue, and maybe it's tied in peripherally to what we've talked about before. Another banner, personal safety and security. What binds us all together? When we go back at home, what are we looking for? Personal safety for ourselves, for our family. We're looking for security, job security, and the like. a buzzword, personal safety and security. And maybe we can toss out another issue that is embedded in what we've been talking about before, and that's violence. What is NATO for? Basically, it's an anti-violence organization. Although I think, Rick, you could take the other side of the argument.
Sure.
Yeah, and I know that I'm going to get a rise out of you on that one. But let me just pursue it for the moment. Violence is obvious when you go to war. But the question is, why are you going to war? Are you doing that to preserve and enhance personal safety and security? Are you using violence to create less violence? That's a tough proposition. And Rick, let me push your button because I'm sure you don't agree with that theory.
You know, I'm reminded of a statement by a French writer in the 1800s who says, cannon aren't forged to be displayed in public parks. You don't build the mightiest military alliance in human history except to either be able to wage war, or threaten to wage war. Those are the three reasons you do it. I have to contend, you know, I mean, I have to take issue with a contention that I was taught in grade school as we were hiding under desks and waiting for the nuclear annihilation of the globe, that Soviet divisions were just perched, you know, in somewhere around Berlin, you know, ready to pour all the way to the English Channel and then somehow on pontoon boats get over to New York. You know, it's very easy to set up a man of straw. It's very easy to say if NATO had not been created in 1949, there'd be a Red Star flying over this building. And then saying, well, as it didn't happen, we were successful. I take issue with that, at root on that. Second of all, in every instance we've seen of NATO military intervention, Bosnia, Yugoslavia, Kosovo, Afghanistan, Libya, NATO entered the fray on behalf of one group of armed belligerents against another group of armed belligerents. They did not bring peace. They won the war for their clients. And this is, you know, this is a very dubious sort of peace if an alliance whose collective population of almost, 900 million people and accounting for somewhere 70 to 75% of global military spending, including three nuclear powers, can bring to their knees a country like Yugoslavia with a population of 10 million or Libya with a country of 6.5 million. That's nothing to boast about.
Thank you for that. Let's move on to another issue. And I didn't get anywhere with my personal safety and security and my anti-violence thought, but let's go on to another one. Do you think, based on our conversation and your life experience and your long-time service in the military, academia, is there common cause among us based on our differing perspectives? Do you see anything common cause that we've talked about so far, Iris?
You know, it's really difficult to look across this table and find common cause, generationally, racially, gender-based. And our views, I guess, even with Rick, I agree with some of your views on stopping NATO, but probably for different reasons. And I didn't get a chance to answer about your personal safety and security question. I'd like to answer to that a bit because, you know, I was privy to be in a meeting earlier today with Ambassador Graber, public diplomacy ambassador for NATO, and as she described NATO to us, she said it's also an alliance of values, and that really stayed with me. Thinking of NATO as an alliance of values, countries that share these same values of social responsibility, of peace building, of stability and reconstruction. The troops on the ground are not trained for peacemaking. They're trained to kill, to search and destroy the enemy. They're not trained to turn that mechanism off from 1 month to the next because policymakers are meeting in Chicago to change that. Just because NATO decides and the allied forces decide we are going to change the policy and change direction here, the troops don't get to turn that switch off. And so when we're talking about social responsibility, I know there's a huge distinction that people keep pointing to between NATO and U.S. policy. But the truth is that NATO is very much led by U.S. policies. And it's really a question of who's leading who in this case. So when I look at the issues that service members of the U.S. forces are dealing with, I don't see that as very different from NATO policies and what's taking place here in the next couple of days, the decisions that will come out of there.
I've got a question that I'm going to pose to you, Rick, and maybe it'll test you a little bit. The question from a listener in St. Louis. Why did NATO not go into Darfur and stop the killing?
Actually, they did go into Darfur. They airlifted some 3,000 African Union troops as peacekeepers. Yeah. You know, that's the sort of mission I would have least objection to, of course, as opposed to 2 years ago when NATO airlifted over 2,000 Ugandan and Burundian troops into the Somali capital of Mogadishu, not as peacekeepers, but as we know, as belligerents in a civil conflict in the country. These are two entirely different missions. You know, first of all, the repeated allusions to Rwanda, tragic as it is, you know, nobody in 1995 thought that NATO would intervene militarily any place, to be perfectly honest with you, much less outside of its area of responsibility or its geographical confines. So, I mean, that was never a realistic perspective. You may as well go back to Cambodia or something to cite. But since NATO has expanded to the east and to the south, and since it's waged a series of military campaigns in three continents again, right, in Southeastern Europe and North Africa and South Asia, then you can get the Washington Post, as I cited earlier, in an unsigned editorial calling for NATO intervention in Mali. I think the genie has been let out of the bottle. And now there'll be somebody in the U.S. Senate, or there'll be somebody, NATO headquarters, you know, talking, you know, pretty irresponsibly about military intervention in most any place in the world. Look, we have the United Nations. We have an Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. We have regional organizations, you know, that can provide security short of going to war. And I think we have to look at those models rather than depend solely on NATO. You know, the war against Yugoslavia in 1999, 78-day bombing campaign, 38,000 air missions, 10,000 combat air missions, did not have United Nations sanction.
That's correct.
And this was, you know, in the face of international law as well, as it was an insult to the United Nations. You know, subsequent to that, almost immediately after NATO marched into the former Serbian province of Kosovo with its so-called Kosovo Liberation Allies, arm in arm, within a couple of years, 250,000 ethnic minorities were purged from Kosovo and have never returned. Ethnic Serbs, ethnic Roma, ethnic Gorans, and also. I don't hear any of the humanitarian advocates here, the right to protect people here, saying a word about those 250,000 people who are never going back. When NATO wages a war again, it wages a war for political and geopolitical objectives, and it sides with one side against another side in a conflict that has been the track record uniformly since over the last 17 years.
The question relates to, as best I can figure out, we're talking about massacres in Rwanda and Congo. Those have faded from our memory. But going back 5, 7, or 8 years ago, horrible opportunities for us to perhaps have intervened, either unilaterally or through NATO. Any thoughts on that? Could we have done anything there, Rick?
I'm glad you raised Congo, because, you know, the figures of people who have been killed as a result of the initial invasion by, our colleague in Rwanda currently and his allies in Uganda have led to, I mean, the estimates are over 5 million Congolese have been killed in a period of maybe 12 or 13 years. This is the most horrendous genocide in our era, in the post-World War II period. And, surely, unfortunately, their economic interest, sometimes not openly acknowledged. There are geopolitical interests that can very cynically, you know, give rise to, military interventions and so forth. But, the fact that, the world screams for some kind of redress and to preempt anything on that scale ever happening again. I would suggest that, you know, by outlawing the use of military force to resolve border and other conflicts and all international affairs, and doing that seriously, would minimize the opportunity for slaughters and massacres of that sort to occur.
We've raised a number of issues. Some of them are contumacious. I don't think we've reached any reasonable agreement on any, but that's the purpose of a panel like this. Maybe the next time we come together, we can get a bit closer. But let me start out with you, Iris. Give me a quickie summary of what we've talked about. What have we missed? What would you like to talk about that we didn't cover?
Well, one point I'd like to bring home, just going back to what the ambassador said, is that there are so many things that can be done before resorting to war. And most service members know this, and so most service members also feel that when they're being used and tapped out of resources for a cause that's illegal and immoral and not following what NATO proclaims as their values of peacekeeping and building stability in other countries, they're going to eventually start to withdraw their consent to these wars. They will either because they are not capable anymore, physically, psychologically, incapable to continue being these war machines or these peace-building machines as we hope to make them, or they will decide to go against the wars. And that's what we've done as an organization, Iraq Veterans Against the War. That's our stance, is that we withdraw our consent from these illegal and immoral ongoing wars because we see the hypocrisy of these policies. And so just to conclude, we want to be sure that the NATO officials know and that our government officials know that we will be there on Sunday, and we hope that they'll come out and acknowledge us as citizens, as residents, as veteran service members that have put our lives on the line too, in spite of our disapproval for these wars. I hope that they'll come out and acknowledge us and receive these medals, these tokens of failed politics, and begin the work of actually rebuilding our country by starting with withdrawing our troops from Afghanistan immediately and giving our service members the right to heal, giving our service members the resources they need to actually come home.
Flash backwards 21 years, 1991. It's already maybe 4 or 5 years after the end of the Cold War. We have, as was mentioned by a witness, you know, the collapse of the Berlin Wall, the reunification of Germany. The following year, we have what was portrayed on this side of the Atlantic as the evil empire peacefully dissolving itself, for the most part. We have the military alliance it had created 6 years after NATO in a response to NATO also dissolve itself. We had, I think, an expectation, every decent person in this world had an expectation 21 years ago, that if we weren't entering an era of universal peace, we were entering an era of disarmament. We are entering into an era where we weren't going to spend, as variously estimated last year, $711 to $729 billion for the defense in the United States, which in constant dollars is the highest since 1945. That's World War II levels. 21 years after we were given that promise, if not openly, we all felt it, didn't we? Didn't we all believe that 21 years ago, no more military blocs, no more major armed conflicts, no more armed races? The Prime Minister of Russia today, if anyone has not heard it, said that a military intervention into the affairs of other countries could lead to a full-fledged war, including with nuclear weapons. Would you have believed 21 years ago you would hear a statement like that? Would you believe that 2 weeks ago the head of the Russian military, Nikolai Makarov, said if the U.S. and NATO continues their missile shield in Europe, we may have to launch a preemptive attack against them? No, this is a nightmare we've got to wake up from. We've got to demand demilitarization.
Iris, put a plug in for your organization real quick. How can the public help you help veterans?
Iraq Veterans Against the War has launched a campaign called Operation Recovery, essentially fighting for service members and veterans' right to heal in the face of these ongoing redeployments. These suggestions from mental health practitioners don't need to be taken seriously by unit commanders. And so we're asking them to take more responsibility and to allow service members the right to heal before having to redeploy to war. And so you can visit us and find out more information at ivaw.org. And please donate to the campaign.
You've been listening to audio from a debate over NATO recorded on May 17, 2012. The full audio and video of the debate is linked at the website of the Pritzker Military Library online at pritzkermilitarylibrary.org. Pritzker is spelled P-R-I-T-Z-K-E-R. To learn more about the Stop NATO project, visit the website rickrosoff.wordpress.com. Rick Rosoff is spelled R-I-C-K-R-O-Z-O-F-F. That concludes this episode of From the Trenches. To learn more and get involved in making media, including helping to make this radio program, visit the website of the Chicago Independent Media Center at chicago.indymedia.org. or call 773-384-8544. I'm Bree Hayden. Special thanks to CanTV and to the Pritzker Military Library for audio used in this program. And thank you for listening. Be sure to join us again for another episode from the Trenches.